You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes and touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Jerry Cream Cheese on Toast with Honey can be a surprisingly satisfying snack house. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 290. On today's show, we're going to talk about coaches. Woo! Keep you guys up to date with what's going on. Who has been brought in for an interview? Who is going to be brought in for an interview? Who is there confirmed interest between, but there has not been an interview set up for? Who has been told that the Knicks are not interested in them at this time? And we're going to dig a little bit further into Stackhouse and Messina today. Not like all the way, but we're going to dig a little further into those two. And we're going to close out by talking about Kristaps and how he is not going to get that elbow procedure that we thought he was. And why that's a good thing. All right, guys. Let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
As of the recording of this podcast, there are four head coaching candidates who are scheduled to interview with the Knicks for their head coaching position. Three of them this week, one of them next week, and there is one which is as good as scheduled, although we don't have the official report yet that it has been scheduled, so I'm not going to lie to you guys. Of those who are confirmed for this week, let's talk about Mark Jackson first. Boo! Boo! I mean, like, I get it from an optics point of view, because in some ways it would have been more annoying to have to deal with the tabloid fallout of not interviewing him. There's a large segment, unfortunately, of the fan base, no disrespect if you're one of them, who wants Mark Jackson to be the head coach. And like, we would have been talking about, why did the Knicks bring in this New York guy? And he brought the Warriors up from the brink of the abyss. That would have sucked. He probably would have been annoying about it on air. He probably would have talked about it because he's already been annoying about the coaching search on air. I'm sure you guys have seen this or heard this by now, but during a playoff game the other day that he was announcing with Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy, more on him in a bit, Mike Breen mentioned that David Fizdale would be interviewing for the Knicks job, and Mark Jackson kept clearing his throat, trying to be like hilarious, like... I also want to interview. Yeah, we know, Mark. We know. Jeff Van Gundy, in contrast, he let Fizdale have his moment on air. He didn't feel the need to insert himself into the conversation. But, you know, Mark Jackson, he's just an obnoxious egomaniac who always makes things about him. I know he was a Knick, and some of you guys like him for that, but I always hated his guts as a Pacer. And he seems just as annoying to me now as he was then. I don't want to spend too much time on him today. We're going to have Chyna from Posting and Toasting on the next show that we record, tomorrow's episode, to talk about all the off-court reasons why he's a terrible choice for the Knicks. So I don't want to spoil that too much. There's going to be two parts. One will be all the off-court reasons, and one will be all the on-court reasons. So I don't want to get ahead of myself, but just to keep you guys in the loop, Mark Jackson, he's going to interview this week. We don't like it here at Locked On Knicks. That's our official stance. David Fizdale, we talked about him. He will also be interviewing this week. That's good. Let's keep going. Let's talk about Jerry Stackhouse, okay? Let's talk about Jerry Stackhouse. Let's get to know him a little bit. I was, you know, trying to do some research on our coaching candidates, trying to dig up some more info, and I came across a Ringer piece from last year about Stack that had some interesting quotes about him and about the kind of experience that he's gaining in the G League. This first quote comes from Frank Vogel, recently fired coach of Orlando, who said, I think, a G League head coaching job is better than an NBA assistant job in some ways. You guys may remember, or maybe you're just hearing now for the first time, Jerry Stackhouse, after spending 1 year as a Raptors assistant, decided he would rather be a head coach in the G League. And so kind of in response to that, Vogel saying, I think a G League coach in some ways is better than being an NBA assistant coach, because here's what he says, back to his quote, you're calling your own shots, calling your own timeouts, making your own substitution patterns and rotations, and calling your own plays on the fly. This stuff is valuable experience. To add to that, Nick Nurse, a current assistant with the Raptors, who's one of the guys I mentioned the other day, who I think would make for a good interview for the head coaching job, he said about coaching in the G League, your growth rate is double, triple maybe, in the G League than being a fourth assistant in the NBA. And that's definitely an interesting point. We talk a lot about studying under some of the greats, like, you know, like a Popovich, like a Carlisle, you know, all kinds of coaches, right? Who people talk about, like a Spoelstra, coming, you know, under their tutelage and learning things that way. But it's equally true that there is no substitution for doing something yourself. It's why I like the young guys getting lots of minutes. For instance, sitting on the bench, learning, absorbing by osmosis, fine, that's all good. But there's no experience for doing things yourself. So, a positive quality in Stackhouse's favor. Here's another quote from that article about Stackhouse. This is just from the author who I should shout out, although I don't have that information with me. My bad, dude. But it's on the Ringer. He preaches accountability to his players. This is Stackhouse now. And actualizes that buzzword by analyzing every 905 game. That's the stupid name of the Raptors G League team. And he grades each player's defensive performance using a grading system learned during his time with the Nets under Avery Johnson, who learned it in Dallas. Stackhouse's teams seek to deny the middle, essentially the circle around the free throw line just inside the arc. And Stackhouse says that if he were interviewing for a job and someone suggested allowing the middle, then he would immediately stand up, shake hands, and walk out. When he says the middle, you know, that circle around the free throw line just inside the arc, I don't think he's necessarily talking about shots there. What he's talking about is you want to force guys to the sidelines, right? Which I agree with stylistically. It takes away more options. If you get a lead point guard like a James Harden going downhill in the center of the court, he's got a lot of options for kick out if he's going down, you know, right up the guts, as opposed to pushing him sideline. So I think that's an interesting bit of strategery that I'm down with. More from the Ringer article. Stackhouse keeps 905's offense simple. Drive and try to finish. If you can't finish, kick. If the kick isn't open for a shot, swing. If the swing isn't open, drive and try to finish. One of his players said, he says it so much, we all groan on the bench if they shoot on the kick and they're not open. So a couple thoughts about this. You know, I'm sure the offense isn't as simple as that, but as a basis, drive and kick and swing, I mean, you guys know I was talking about this the other day, probably my favorite play all season was the Knicks did that two times in a row, swinging it to one side of the court and then to the other, and then Frank unfortunately missed the wide open three-point shot. But I love playing basketball like that. So if that's a major component of what Stackhouse wants to do, that's a positive thing, I think. I also like that one of his players said, we all groan when someone messes up. That means he's really like making it clear to his guys what he wants to accomplish. They're on the same page. They understand what their goals are and what they're setting out to do. So another positive. This comes from, I believe this is from The Post, actually, switching gears about Stackhouse. This is a quote from him. He said, I probably wouldn't like my game as a coach, talking about when Stackhouse used to play as a player. He said, mid-range twos. I tell guys, all right, if it's against the shot clock and the guy runs you off and you got to take a one dribble pull-up, okay, do it. But otherwise, let's try to get into the paint and find another trigger and find something else on the weak side. Or just sidestep the defender and take the three. Amen. The Knicks could use this kind of instruction, especially, they loved faking the shot and then taking a step in for a long two. Loved it. And some people would defend Hornacek and say, well, that's his player's tendencies. Well, a coach is there to adjust his player's tendencies and to get them to do things that maybe aren't their first instinct but are beneficial for team success. So if you can talk to some of these Courtney Lees, some of these Frank Ntilikina's who may, for the time being, be more comfortable stepping in off the pump fake to take a long two and get them to sidestep and take a long three, or a normal distance three, that, in my estimation, is an improvement. So a couple of interesting tidbits about Jerry Stackhouse. He's looking better and better to me. He was my gut instinct first pick. He's looking better and better to me. I like Stackhouse. Right now, of the guys, I'll say this, of the guys that right now are confirmed to have interviews or be just on the verge of getting interviews, Stackhouse is my favorite. How do you like that? Another guy who's confirmed, he's coming in next week. He's not in the States right now, so he's flying in, travel schedule, etc. David Blatt. He will be interviewed next week by the New York Knicks. I think they should. You know, he was a hugely hot candidate before getting the job with Cleveland. We all know what happened there. It was supposed to be a rebuild, but LeBron James shocked the world by coming home, and then it became a whole different situation. David Blatt was fired after going to the finals and then bringing the Cavs to a record of, I believe, 31-10 in the next season. An excellent record. He's had excellent foreign league success. My unfair, unfounded criticism is he just strikes me as a guy that wouldn't have a great time interacting with players. Like, that's my gut feel. You do never know. You never know. Sometimes people respond to people who, you know, you wouldn't think they would. They respect them for whatever reason. But I don't know. He seems like a little too dry, a little too weird. It's it's extremely unfair of me. And he actually has the best one-loss record of any of the head coaches with NBA head coaching experience the Knicks are bringing in so far. More on Blatt in the coming days, but right now he's not my favorite. I'll say that. There is confirmed interest. So we talked about Mark Jackson. We talked about Fizdale. We talked about Stackhouse. We talked about David Blatt. These guys are all scheduled to come in for interviews. I believe Stackhouse actually has interviewed as of Monday evening. I think I saw that tweet. Don't hold me to it. I won't bet my life. But he's scheduled to be interviewed very soon. Mike Woodson. You guys remember him? The Knicks have asked for and received permission to interview Mike Woodson. He's not currently scheduled, but he will be coming in soon. Former Knicks head coach, obviously. Current Clippers assistant under Doc Rivers. And this one, as an actual prospect, like, no. I'm not in favor of this. It's too weird. You don't bring him back. I don't want to rehash Mike Woodson arguments that I had in, like, the posting and toasting comment section and with my friends from when he was here. But he's not the right guy. If this becomes more serious, I'll get into it. I'm not going to spend too much breath on Mike Woodson right now. What I will say is Mike Woodson seems like an okay coach. I don't want him on the Knicks. Not going to spend too much time on it. But if Perry and Mills want to, you know, make sure his name is out there to keep him on the coaching carousel along with some other guys. I mean, Mike Woods, a person of color, maybe Pills and Mills and Perry, you know, want to help, you know, raise the profile of coaches of color, like, obviously, historically and current day. You know, black people in America don't have the easiest time getting a first chance, let alone a second one. So if, like, that factors into their decision-making, that's cool. But you got to admit, from, like, an organizational standpoint, it's weird. It's weird to bring him back in. I don't know what to make of this other than what I speculated on earlier. But I'm going to move on to someone who the Knicks don't have interest in. And I don't think they should, even though I love the guy but from the bottom of my heart. Jeff Van Gundy. He's a guy who I was like, that doesn't make any sense. He hasn't coached in the NBA for 10 plus years. He quit the first time around. I mean, I know it was like largely because of Dolan, and God bless him. I mean, I can't blame someone for hating Dolan and quitting, but he quit the job. He had the job and he quit it. If you want it so bad, you stick around through a crappy regime. That's a pretty big flag against you, I gotta say. I don't quite get the logic of, you know, why they would have brought him in to begin with. But he's not the guy. So I'm not going to stress over them not bringing him in. And, you know, it's weird because something leaked from Berman. And who knows if this is true, but these are allegedly the reasons the Knicks didn't want Van Gundy. He's been away from the NBA sidelines and hasn't coached in the analytics era. Okay, fair enough, right? He is an old-school coach who hasn't been amenable to management types giving major input into coaching the club. That's fair, too, if that's true. You don't want people... you don't want management being all up in your business and being, like, real micromanaging. But you should be in agreement from top to bottom. There's a lot that management... When I talk about management, I'm not just talking about the GM, but I'm talking about, you know... Well, I guess I am. I'm talking about organizational philosophy. And if you say, I want you to take into account analytics or whatever, and the guy's like, no, I don't care about that, that's a problem. And then the last point I thought was interesting, they said Van Gundy gained a reputation, fair or unfair, for not relating well with international players, with a tough love approach backfiring on former first-round pick Frederick Weiss of France. There was a lot going on with Frederick, so I don't know how much you can blame Van Gundy. The thing is, like, this list leaked or whatever, and if it's from the Knicks, fine, because, again, I don't think Van Gundy was the guy, but I can give you a list of 1,000 reasons why Mark Jackson shouldn't even be considered. I'm not going to stress too much about it, because I do think that the Knicks are going to interview a lot more people. I do. I have a prediction. The Knicks will not make a quick decision. I think we have at least one more week after this one, possibly two. I mean, maybe more, who knows? But I don't think they're going to, like, just pull the trigger on something really quick. And I think if someone is willing to jump, like someone that they interview early, you know, if they're willing to jump on Charlotte or Phoenix or Orlando, those horrible cities with crappy basketball futures, then let them go. They're not right for the Knicks anyway, so start early. Gather a big pool. I'd be surprised if they didn't want to send the message, Mills and Perry, that they're going to be thorough and they're going to interview a lot of people and they're going to make a huge decision like this, not hastily. I think they want that image of really leaving no stone unturned. So I think we're going to see a lot more coaching candidates. I want to talk about some notable absences from the names we've been hearing so far. But first, just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. Let's talk about some notable absences from the Knicks coaching search list so far. Doesn't mean we're not going to hear about these people. But the Spurs assistants. We have not heard anything about Torrey Messina or Becky Hammon. They're still in the playoffs, the Spurs, so at first I was like, oh, that's probably why it is. But Messina has been given permission to interview with Charlotte. I mean, we know the Spurs are gone in a couple days when the Warriors dispatched for them. But curious, not the end of the world, though. One thing that I thought of that I may not love about Spurs' assistants is that Popovich's teams don't shoot a ton of threes. And I know, like, Popovich knows what he's doing. They're fantastic defensively. Once again this year. But it is like, I was like, as I thought about it more, I was like, I wonder. I'm just saying, I'm working through this process with you guys. New information every day. Do a little bit more research every day. But let's talk a little bit more about Torrey Messina today. All right? Some things that I've learned while digging. I want to shout out Nicholas Denning over at The Hive, which is SB Nation's Hornets site. He unearthed an article about Messina's stint with CSKA Moscow, a Russian team. This article was written back in 2008-2009, and it gives us some insight into what sort of coach Messina could be. It was like translated, it was written in the first person, so I think this is like either written by Messina or like directly transcribed from interviews with him, but here's what he has to say. And this is about when he was a head coach in Moscow in the Russian League. Our coaching staff spends a lot of time trying to figure out how we can utilize the best characteristics of our players on offense. This is a long process, and sometimes we can't find an exact role for each of our players right away. We strongly believe that, beyond the offensive choices, we have to take care of the players' improvement, putting them into the best conditions to be dangerous on offense. We want to be effective using the players' skills. So, in contrast to... This isn't, you know, the end-all, be-all of their coaching philosophies. We're just getting bits and pieces of information here. But in contrast to what we learned about Stackhouse before, when he mentioned a systematic way he wants to play basketball, although there's plenty of that in what Messina has to say, he's talking here specifically about not having too rigid a system and playing to the strengths of your players, which is excellent. That's a strike in the positive. A strike in the positive? A ball? A balk? A balk? Let's balk him home in the positive comment. Stick to basketball, right? More from this article. The general idea of the CSKA offensive system that eventually led us to our system of play was the conviction that it is certainly not the set play or playing free that makes the difference in a game. Rather, so he's talking about like structured offense versus, you know, more freelancing. Rather, it was the ability of our players to understand what the defense was doing and to always be conscious of any changes that they were making, the defense. Our players must be able to read the defensive behavior of their opponents. Any offense can be original. But if the player on offense is not able to understand what the defense does, he loses effectiveness and our offense slows down. So he's talking about kind of a read-react offense here. It may give you triangle flashbacks. But we know any good offense does this. Any good offense reacts to what the defense gives you. When we talked about Trey Burke turning the corner offensively this year, he talked about, you know, taking what the defense gives you in pick and roll and not just predetermining what you're going to do. And that's obviously a staple of modern offensive systems. And that would be an example of what Messina is talking about, being able to react to the defense. And I've said this for a little while now. Basketball is, on a lot of levels, an elaborate game of rocks, paper, scissors. I really believe this. You're just constantly reacting to what your opponent is doing or not doing and trying to guess what their next throw is going to be. So all good stuff there from Messina. Another quote from this article. We make great use of offensive transition, the changing phase from defense to offense. These are not simple phases of a primary and secondary fast break, but an offense that is run full court with no interruptions. Our team has to move like a wave where our players run at medium-high speed, occupying our offensive spots and trying to get any advantage they can before the defense is set. I love the way he talks about transition. It's not just one guy running as quickly as he can, but it's the whole team moving quickly with a purpose. I harped on this a lot earlier in the season when the Knicks were trying to win games and stopped talking about it once it switched to player development. But transition buckets are ridiculously highly efficient shots. And he talks a lot about their transition strategy in this piece. So he clearly places heavy importance on it, but not just like running like a chicken with your head cut off, running with a purpose. So I liked that. Here's one last bit from this piece. Another goal of our offense is to attack their best scorers. We want their best scorer working hard on defense to therefore limit him and put him in possible penalty situations. By getting this player in foul trouble, we gain another advantage while the opposition loses one. To that, I have to say, shrewd, clever, slick. I've talked about this kind of strategy before. I think it's a good one. Unless their best offensive player is LeBron James. Might not be the guy you want to attack, but in a lot of instances, I think that's a solid strategy. And he also talked a lot in this piece about everyone on the team needing to be able to pass. And I do think that's important. Not everyone has to be, you know, Pete Maravich out there, but everyone has to be, has to have like halfway decent vision for their position and the ability to hit guys in their spots where they don't have to bend over at their, you know, ankles to pick up the ball and shoot. Now, this piece is from 2009 that I'm sharing, so it may not reflect like his most current thinking, but it certainly, in my mind, it shows a sharp X's and O's guy with a fantastic knowledge of the game. I mean, it's a very detailed article. There's way more that I left out. What I wonder about him, I haven't really heard him talk. I wonder about his personality. Does he seem like a real leader that people can get behind? I'm not sure about that sort of intangible, but he's shaping up in my mind as a really sharp dude. I mean, he won a billion championships in every Euro, you know, situation possible. So he was already one of my favorites. This only made me like him more. I want to close with some news about Kristaps, but first just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire multiverse! Let's talk about Krispy Kreme's elbow. Per friend of the Sodes, Ian Begley, the elbow is healed, and it will not require any surgical procedure. If you remember earlier on the season, he was walking around with a grapefruit on his elbow. It was gross. It was big and swollen, and it was full of fluid. This wasn't a big deal, you know, this injury in general. And from what I could tell, the procedure was basically to drain the elbow. But hey, the fewer times under the knife, the better. And score one for the Lizard on this one. This just goes to show that he's going to be the first guy to come back from an ACL tear with more lateral quickness, more breakaway speed, and more jumping ability than ever before. He's the Lizard. Don't you doubt him. All right, that's it for this episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Leave a review. Let me know what you think. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Tell everyone about this show. Everyone. Like, if you're walking down the street and a homeless person's like, Elvis is alive. Hey, you kind of look like Elvis. Are you Elvis? Be like, no, ma'am, I'm not. Thank you for the compliment. Also, listen to Locked On Knicks. Follow us on Twitter if you dare. Locked On Knicks. Also, NBA Injury Report. Both wonderful Twitter accounts, if I do say so myself. If I do say so myself. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Always salt the pasta water. And tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!